I would love to go and live in another country, but you know, my mom and my sister need me here. And quite often when I ask people to break those things down, there are so many stories that a person has created as to why they can't do something. And we're not using the same amount of energy to create narratives around how we could do something. And so in that way, imagination, it can be great, but it depends on how you're using it.
What Happens in Between offers a space for candid conversations about the deliciously dynamic process of creating something meaningful. The theme for season 3 is multiplicity and how we develop the internal narratives of who we are. We're cultivating conversation about crafting the self amongst interwoven, paradoxical, and layered identities. I'm Athena Sayaka. Welcome in.
Hi, welcome to another episode of What Happens in Between. Today, I am joined by the steward of wisdom, that is Siobhan Swain.
Thank you. That's an interesting term.
Do we like it or interesting?
Good. I like it. No, okay. I like it.
Well, hi. How are you doing?
I am doing good. Yeah, I feel just really open and like interested because you ask such unique questions. So I think this will be good.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad you brought that forward.
Yeah.
That's going to come up again. Okay. So Siobhan, who of you is present today?
You know, I feel like all of me is the best response.
Perfect. Love it. So when we were talking earlier about the traits or the things that we wanted to center this conversation around, the two things that you mentioned were Black woman and free spirit, which I just love. That sits really good in the mind.
Yeah.
So how do you define being a free spirit?
You know, it's interesting. I came up with that after like doing some reflection on values. And I am big on let me double check the definition because I know I have my idea of it. And then it could be contrary to whatever I imagine. But for me, it's really about being unconventional and kind of like giving myself permission to show up that way. However that may be. And it's in a multitude of ways. You know, I often see things differently than other people. I am not someone who does best with like boxing myself in. I need to feel like I have the freedom and the expansiveness to be kind of like what I say, all of me, right? All of these different parts. And that can be a challenge in different systems and scenarios. And so I think that term really does feel good. And it's actually something I've really, really kind of came to me clearly over the last few months.
Yeah, I feel you for sure with not wanting to box yourself in. I've been reflecting a lot about marketing and selling, why I experience resistance around those. And for me, a lot of it is like, it requires, at least in my current perspective, I can decide if I'm going to change it later. But in my current perspective, marketing requires a flattening of a thing in order for it to be like digestible to take for like, you know, a quick hit decision making, which is essentially what marketing is all about, right? It's like, I want you to make your decision quickly to give me your money. Thank you very much.
Yes.
So with this concept of being a free spirit, I feel very much that my current evolution relationship to that is in having the textures, like allowing all of the textures to be, allowing the layers to layer and not worrying about being legible.
Yeah.
This was in a different episode, but there was someone had said something really beautiful about like the difference between are you comprehensible versus are you like legible? And I've been thinking about that too, where it's like, dang, like, can I just be? Am I allowed?
Right. Yes.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, being a free spirit really requires that self-direction. And I'm wondering, how do you hold a vision for beyond like what is given? How do you stand 10 toes on that kind of thing when systems or people around you are just not seeing what you're seeing and don't really believe you?
Right. I would say that there's risk, right? It's risky. I would say a benefit for me is that I, you know, this is something that people think of as a negative. I think of it as a strength. I can be quite stubborn and not in a way that it's going to super impact anyone, but just kind of like, one, I don't think that people have to agree with me, right? I'm not entering a space in a lot of situations with the expectation being that people are going to agree. Now, it looks different because professionally, I have worked in roles where I was an advocate, where I may be the person who's speaking up about a certain thing. And in those cases, you know, for me, it's about, am I showing up as myself in these places and in these spaces? And a part of being a free spirit means that a lot of times people think that there are, like, you know, we have these options and my brain sees these options. And so a lot of it is expansion. I think that something that is another benefit for me is that I am pretty good at communicating with people. And so it is challenging, and yet I have been able to do it well, because that is something that is, you know, a gift that I have.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have talked at length about relationship.
Yes.
And specifically with, like, open ajnas, that desire to have some kind of structure around or a process for imagination. And I'm really interested, what is your relationship to imagination right now?
Yes, we have talked about that, and it sent me down a little bit of a rabbit hole, which was good. And I feel like, you know, a lot of my work is direct. I have for, like, literally almost 20 years spoken to people on a very intimate level that not everyone gets access to. And not even just as a therapist. I've worked doing community work. I've worked in, you know, clinics. I've done home visits. So I'm getting access to people's experiences in a little bit of a different way. And one thing that I would say is imagination is extremely important, because you have to be able to believe something different to achieve something different, which sounds very basic. But what it comes down to is a lot of people will have a grand idea, and then before they can finish saying it, they have immediately followed it up with all of the ways in which it can't happen. And so I think a lot of people find themselves in this cyclical pattern of having great ideas, having great dreams, having imagination to see things differently, but then they immediately kind of, like, erode some of that with, you know, but this. Well, you know, I would love to go and live in another country, but, you know, my mom and my sister need me here. And quite often when I ask people to break those things down, there are so many stories that a person has created as to why they can't do something. And we're not using the same amount of energy to create narratives around how we could do something. And so in that way, imagination, it can be great, but it depends on how you're using it.
Yeah. How do you spend time living in that possibility, right? So I know this is a thing I want to do. The reasons that it's not going to work are already there. I don't need to think about them more, right? I don't need to come up with more.
Yeah.
How do you spend that time coming up with the reasons why it can or will work?
Yeah, honestly, it's quite often a fight. It can be a internal back and forth, right? Because most of us, you know, our brain works to keep us safe.
Absolutely.
If I have an idea that feels risky, it makes sense to me that my brain is going to be like, well, hey, remember, these things could go wrong. These things are not in place. And so I think that is, knowing that is helpful for me, because then I can do something with that information. I can have a conversation with myself that is, you know what, it feels risky because I haven't done it before. Just because I have not done something does not mean I cannot do it. And I need to help myself prepare for the discomfort that will come from doing something new. And then in terms of what does it look like for my personal process, a part of the free-spirited part for me is, like, this may be a conversation I'm having while I'm walking around a park, while I'm out in nature, while I am, you know, looking at a plant that I have grow in this space where it seemed like maybe they're not going to grow there. And it can be a moment of inspiration of, like, okay, there are other ways that this can happen other than what I'm seeing right now. And am I allowing myself the freedom to think about this differently? And a lot of this for me is quite internal.
Yeah. Siobhan, I have been walking around talking to myself out loud, like,
yes, yapping. Please do.
I have been like, so initially I was just taking walks and just allowing myself to talk mm-hmm. or like, I love talking when I'm biking, which yeah. is hilarious, but it's like funny because the wind brings my voice back to me and I'm like, oh, that's like a new perspective. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. But yeah, I definitely resonate with that where for context, I recently had an audition that is very important to me. And I haven't heard back as of the time of this recording, but part of the self-talk that was happening, like I was trying to understand, okay, what do you need right now? You as me, mm-hmm. like, what do I need right now that I'm like fixating on this or having all of these like negative thoughts that did not exist before I clicked submit, you know what I mean? Right. Like before the end of that audition. And for me, it came down to like, I fear being laughed at. Mm. I don't even fear the rejection. Mm-hmm. But the idea that these people are like going over my video and laughing and being like, hey, Tom, come over here. Look right. at this. Like, you know what uh-huh. I mean? And it's like, okay, so how, I don't know how to support myself through that. Like that might happen.
Right. I don't know. That's actually quite funny.
Go on.
I mean, not to make fun of you, but it's quite funny in that how did your brain decide that this is what was going to happen? Ooh. Right. Like of all the possibilities that exist, mm-hmm. yours was, they're now calling people to the computer to laugh at me.
Right. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is vanity, no?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's a triple Leo. So there's a lot there where I'm like, well, of course everyone's looking at me. And it's not just like, this is an interesting line of questioning, actually, because I'm really digging into this. And it's not just the idea, because again, the rejection isn't what bothers me. Mm-hmm. But my brain went, the rejection will be so spectacular, if there is one, that they would have to call people it. Like they would need yeah. other people to witness this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I also think there is vulnerability in being seen.
Oh, of
right.
course.
Especially yeah. in being seen as something that you really desire. And so I think it's so many layers to it, right? Like mm-hmm. there definitely could be some vanity there because like who wants to be laughed at? And then what would that mean for you, even if they did?
Right.
Because they could laugh and you could still get it.
That's true. That's so interesting. So let's go into human design a little bit more here. Mm-hmm. And I will have at this point put out an episode giving people context for human design. So if you want to explain things, you can, but feel free to assume that there's like a level of context gotcha. Given already. You are a 4-6 generator, mm-hmm. correct?
Yes.
What's your definition? Are you single, split?
Single. I only have 2 defined centers.
Yeah.
There's no room for any splitting.
Yeah. You feel like a single definition to me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm a 3-6. You're a 4-6. I'm really interested in how you have experienced that 6 line mm-hmm. as a generator. And then I'll share kind of how I've experienced it as a manifesting generator, because I think there's probably a little bit of difference there.
Yeah. You know, to be honest, my biggest thing that I have reflected on with the 6 is I know that there are, you know, the 6 line is kind of defined as having these really unique like periods of phases of life. And mm-hmm. the thing that really stands out to me about the 6 line is this kind of like innate wisdom. And the way I feel I've experienced that is throughout life, there has almost always been a situation where this is going to kind of get into power dynamics, right? Where it's yeah. either someone's a teacher, I'm the student, someone's a supervisor, I'm the employee, some type of dynamic like that, where the roles are reversed and they're coming to me for something. And it has repetitively and consistently happened. And it's not even mm-hmm. like major, right? It could just be something like, hey, we were having this meeting and you had this really unique perspective on this. Here's a question I have. What do you think? But there has almost always been some type of experience that showed that someone saw that within me and then came and sought some type of counsel.
Interesting. So with the power dynamics piece of it, how did you experience the quote unquote 3 phase of that 6, like the experimental phase? And did that ever interact with this power dynamic flip that you're talking about?
Mm. I would say they probably happened concurrently. Mm. The experimental phase, I feel like, was just very much me trying different things. A lot of career changes or thinking of what I wanted to do. And this is interesting to ask that question, because something that I have always thought was funny was when I was deciding on going for a master's program, going back to free-spirited, not wanting to be boxed in, I chose social work because I was like, what gives me the most options to change as much as I want while still having something to put in a search bar?
Right.
Which sounds super random. But if we think about, I have an open G center. So that sense of self for me has always felt like fleeting or whatever. And so you think about career, there are people who are like, I've always wanted to do this and I did this. I didn't have that. And so really searching something that allowed me to try different things was super helpful. And it allowed me to tap into different areas, different parts of the human experience. And then when I, after some time, got to a point of, okay, well, what would this look like for me was then a transition into doing therapy.
So that's so interesting. What are your two defined centers?
Spleen, sacral.
Oh,
yeah.
Does that make you a sacral authority or a splenic authority?
Sacral.
Fascinating. Okay. With the sacral authority and that open G center, I'm really interested in if those two centers ever feel in conflict. So you have maybe that intuitive hit, like yes or no to some crossroads, but is the G center ever lagging behind? Is it stuck in a different story?
I don't think so.
Or is it always open, right? So it's just like, yeah, let's do it.
It feels very fluid, right? So I was having a conversation with someone probably 2 months ago. And just like in the midst of the conversation, no preparation that this thought was going to pop in my head. And I was like, yeah, I'm a therapist now, but I don't know what I'll be doing in 3 years.
Yeah.
Just like, and that's almost always. No, this is what I do now. This is how I look now. I don't know. I may cut my hair off next week. Right. But it's kind of this idea of this fluidity and this permission to shift and change. And, you know, we kind of talked a little bit before about like, you know, you want to talk about identity. And I think something that allows that fluidity for me is so many people, like when we think about experimentation, quite often it's with career, right? It's with different experiences. And some people's identity is highly tied to what they do, right? The title they hold, what status comes with that, what does not. And I haven't ever really felt that. And I think that that does give a little bit of freedom, because you can call me a therapist, a social worker, like that doesn't actually tell anyone much about me other than how I earn income.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that.
That's great. That's great. Sometimes I'm so jealous of open G's, because it's hard for me sometimes to even make a YouTube video, because I'm like, well, will I be able to stand on this in 90 days? And it's like,
yeah,
it's true in the moment that I'm making it. So that's enough.
Exactly. Yes.
Oh, that's awesome. So going back again to this six line really quickly, and then we're going to move somewhat away from human design. Where do you see yourself role modeling in your life?
Oh, probably everywhere. And I think a part of this for me is role modeling in a sense of I am comfortable showing up as me. That's, you know, nobody has to do what I do. Nobody has to say what I say. But I do think it's really important for people to get to a space in their life where they can show up as themselves. And I understand how risky that can be in our society and within certain systems. I also think that some feedback that I've received from other folks is like, there's a lot of, like I once worked and I was supervising and I always found myself having this thought of like, I'm not trying to mother people, right? But that also is a part of how I show up, not in a like foo-foo sense, but if someone is struggling with someone like that care, right? The guidance, the quote unquote protection, specifically when it's someone and we may get a report from someone else where they didn't do this and me kind of like, well, let me check with them first. You know, like just that, like,
we're
not jumping to any conclusions here. Let me figure out what's happening. I've worked as an advocate and in social services for so long that so much of the times where I can remember, like I don't get upset easily, but the times when I did, it was like, somebody made my client cry. And I'm like, absolutely not.
Right.
Like, we can knock all this over. Like, that's not really my personality. But in those moments, that's what happens. And so I think that the role modeling, I think, often shows up in kind of like that archetype of someone who can show, like, to model for others what it looks like to have someone show up for them in this particular area.
Yeah, that is resonant. Speaking of showing up fully as yourself, one of the tenets of your work, from what I could scrape together in my research, is this formula of clarity plus embodiment equals authenticity.
Yeah.
And I'd love for you to break down each of the pieces in that, but also how you got to this as the formula.
Yeah, I know. It's interesting. When you saw that, when I saw that question, I was like, oh, have I even thought about that in a while? But I was thinking, and I just kind of was like, you know, what do I mean about when I say this? And for me, clarity is around being clear. And I would say that the overarching context of this is self, right?
Yeah.
So am I clear on who I am, who I want to be, how I show up, how things impact me? I didn't go with the word self-awareness because I think that self-awareness for some people is very shallow. It's very much like, I like this, I like that. But it's like, it's some of that, but it could also be deeper. And that's kind of an area where I've used human design to help people get clear on, like, how do you show up? How do you navigate? And then the embodiment piece is self-awareness alone, clarity alone does nothing. And it can actually cause more harm because now I know.
Yeah.
Right. And I know that as a therapist, where so often people are like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited. And I'm like, are you? Because this is about to get rough. Right. If a person is truly committed to doing the work, it's going to get rough because, yes, we want to know how life has impacted us. We want to know how trauma has impacted us. We want to know how we show up. But knowing that can sometimes just lead to grief. Right. And the embodiment. And I definitely looked up the definition because I was like, what is the word in embodiment that really stands out? And it's that something has to be tangible. Right. So now that I have this information, what tangible action am I taking to do something about it? And that often is behavioral change. People who want clear understanding and who want to make a shift in who they are, there has to be accountability. Mm-hmm. Right. Because it can very much be these things happen. Now these people need to change. And there are a lot of people who feel like their healing, their work is about the people around them making changes, which then lends to victimhood, right? Because now I'm miserable because you're not doing something, right? Or I'm miserable because, you know, my uncle didn't do something or somebody else, versus the embodiment for me means there is a level of, now that I know this, what do I do? How do I make this work for me? How do I take accountability? And then if I am doing that, if I'm deciding that, you know what, I no longer want to not show up for myself, the embodiment means, how do I start to show up for myself? And then you can get to authenticity, which is just like being who you really are.
Yeah. As you were expressing that, the image I got was a meeting in the middle, right? So the clarity is like a mental, it's an up here thing. The embodiment is a grounded thing. And they like come and coalesce and get to equal authenticity.
Yeah, a full person. Because I, you know, the population that I work with, they're highly intelligent.
Yeah.
Self-awareness does nothing, right? Because like what?
Self-awareness can...
there's a benefit. I'm just intellectualizing everything. I can use every clinical term, every single thing. And I am really good at telling folks, okay, so what are you doing? Right? Because you have all this information and nothing has changed. The pain is there. And not in a rude way, but in a, there is a level of avoidance that comes with just purely intellectualizing things.
Absolutely.
Because I am not actually dealing with anything. So it is a, okay, you're saying you've been dealing with anxiety for 10 years. Where do you feel the anxiety? And then people are like, well, I don't know. I never thought about it. And then we go to like body-centered practices where anxiety is normally a full body experience. Where is it for you? Where are you feeling these things? Because then you can figure out what to do. What are my cues? But I, you know, self-awareness is good, but it's sometimes now I just know, and now I'm even more sad.
Yeah. What I was going to say is I think that self-awareness has goodness up to a point, and then after that, it's just adding, it will make me more depressed. Mm-hmm. Or it will strengthen, not necessarily self-awareness, but the like intellectualization, like solely talk therapy is not something that I personally subscribe to, because what am I doing other than re-strengthening the myelin connections of the thing that I'm trying to move away from, right?
Yeah. And I would say it would depend on what the focus of the talk is though, right?
Yeah.
Because if it's talking as in I feel, and then if we go into questions, okay, why did you feel that? When did you feel mm-hmm. that? Who do you feel that around? A person may begin to realize, you know, there's a pattern. I actually feel terrible when I engage with these folks.
Yeah.
And some people don't know. If you just stick with the intellectualizing in terms of learning the terms, but not knowing what those terms mean for you. Mm-hmm. I think that's where people get really stuck, because they talk about it as if it's this thing over there. And it's like, no, this is happening to you. How is this impacting you? And really challenging a person to make those connections. And people who are really good at intellectualizing are really good at avoiding saying the hard thing.
That tracks.
Yeah.
That tracks. Uh-huh. That's really funny. You've mentioned some of the modalities that you like, mm-hmm. or I guess maybe you haven't yet. Two questions then. What are some of your favorite modalities? Mm-hmm. And then also, where do you like to fit them in? And I can give an example if you need me to explain that second question.
Yeah. So I'll start with answering the first one, mm-hmm. because when I saw that, my first response was, I don't know. Uh-huh. Right. And then I was like, that's not true. I think part of it is that I do what I do, and I don't really necessarily consider the modalities, because again, the way I see things, all of these threads fit together. And right. So for me, one thing that is really important is getting a person to understand things about themselves, right? Again, there are a lot of very vague terms that are used. And I think that the way that I have been able to ask questions gets people to a level of depth that they may otherwise avoid. I also really, really love anything related to somatics. A lot of what I do is body centered. The population I work with, because again, oftentimes quite successful, above average intelligence. And these individuals have often overcome trauma by achieving, right? So mm-hmm. I got all the achievements and I've spent all this time moving forward. The next thing, it's like this high that you're constantly seeking. But have you ever taken a time to sit in an achievement? Can you even name the achievements? Right? Because it's like, there's always something else to do. And so some of it is getting people to connect with their bodies, to figure out how to reconnect with their emotions. And that can be quite challenging. So really helping people build those tools, build those skills. I also, quite frequently, I do a lot of trauma work. Well, you know, I just said this at least twice this week. Hey, can you go get a massage? Can you go get something else to help process this stuff out of your body? So I will often refer folks to a massage therapist, to acupuncture, things like that, to kind of really help get a holistic process in there. And then mm-hmm. human design, I incorporate that, astrology, inner child work. It's very fluid the way it happens. And a lot of times people don't even know that's all that we're doing. And I would say like at least twice a week, somebody will be like, what did you just do? Mm. Because to me, it's all this major, like, it's one thing to me, all these pieces. And it feels very much like we were just having a couple of like you asked him a couple of questions. I took a couple of deep breaths, incorporated some visualization. And now I have this.
Right. Yeah. I can relate to seeing it all as one thing. For example, when I'm reading human design charts, I have found that I can't exactly move with human design in the way where I'm like, okay, we're going to talk about your strategy. Like, we're going to start here. We're going to start at this particular spot. That is always where we start. That doesn't really work for me, because what I see the best is the relationships between things. And then it's going to be that your gate 3 plus your Jupiter is what's talking right now. And so, like, I just have to be open and available to see who's talking in a given moment. And there are a lot of things that are being incorporated in, but I couldn't necessarily name them.
Right. Which is why the question was hard. Cause I'm just like, I really wanted to say, I just sit down and do razzle dazzle, but that is not helpful to anyone. That makes complete sense to me.
I like it. I like it. I get that. Yeah. So regarding the second question, which you answered, I would say, what I was thinking about when I wrote that question is the ways that if I'm in a situation in a moment and I can recognize it, the first thing I go to for myself personally is somatics. I'm going to do what I can to regulate myself until there's distance from the situation. And then I can take it intellectually. Then I can talk through what I think just happened, or like process any of it. And then we probably got to go back to somatics again.
You know, I think it depends on a person and it depends on the thing, because everyone processes differently. Now, I am often going to go to somatics quite frequently with this caveat. If a person has been disconnected from their emotions and their body for a long period of time, it can be very risky for them to immediately start feeling all of these things. And there needs to be some buildup. And so it may be that the recognition is there that the body needs work, but the tools to navigate and sustain that emotional overload, which is normally how people describe it feeling, there needs to just be a little bit more care there, because it can just be very hard to have a person tap into this stuff and then be like, okay, well, have a good night. And then they're up all night. Like, that's not going to work. Right. So it is kind of like dependent upon where that person is coming in. And so we may need to start with just like having a conversation and breaking down, what do these terms mean? What does this look like? What are some examples? And really take it slow so that that person can build up some tolerance to handle the bigger emotions.
Speaking of your questions, you always have shared excellent questions. When we were in that cohort together, you were always coming in hot, scalding hot with your questions. And of course, as a therapist for today, as a therapist, well-crafted questions are a very valuable aspect of your process. And I'm interested, when did you discover this skill that you have?
I would say it was from the feedback of others, because for me, this is like how I think, right? Like, these questions are really just my way of making sense of things. And to me, it's kind of like, this is how I move, this is how I operate. And I had previously received feedback or had people say things to me like, you know, your way of breaking things down is really helpful. Now, I must add this caveat. As I'm describing the people I work with who are overachievers and all these things, so am I. That's why I can do it well, because it's really like game recognizes game, right? And so sometimes my sessions with folks are like chess matches. They're making a move, I'm making a move. And so I had not really given any thought to it, because it just was like, okay, that's great, I'm moving on to the next thing. And then once I got to a place in my life where I was like, I need to learn to slow down. I need to learn to really sit in some of the accomplishments I've had and to do some deeper reflection. So these things are all happening simultaneously. And then I was hearing day after day, that's a really good question. How did you think of that? I've never, no one's ever asked me that before. And it just was kind of like a, you know, I would hear it and I would keep going. And then I was like, I feel like I should start to write these down. And so I just started to create my own questions. I'm very observative when I am working with someone. And so seeing that every time I ask this question, it's like almost immediate tears. What is it about this question? And having like my own level of curiosity and really just kind of like being more receptive to the positive feedback versus just being like, it's no big deal and keeping it moving. So part of it was my own work in allowing myself to like receive positive feedback and to actually take the time, reflect on that. But then also observing, if this is a skill that I have, how are other people receiving it? What's the impact? And it has been quite interesting. And I often just chuckle when somebody is like, you know, you really know what you're doing. And there's a part of me that's like, haha. And there's a part of me that's like, what do you think you've been paying me for? Right. But I also know that yes. There are a lot of people who are in these places and spaces who don't do the deep internal work to show up in a certain way. And so I have had quite a bit of feedback where people have said, this is the first time I've had an experience with a therapist that was like this. This is the first time this has happened. And so I think one, learning to slow down and learning to actually receive the compliments without brushing them off. And then doing the reflective work on, okay, if this is working, what are the questions that are working? How are people receiving this?
Mm-hmm. The comment that you get about being a really good experience with the therapist, being the first time that they're having this kind of experience with the therapist, I'm also interested how much of that is related to your bringing in experience as a Black woman and your clientele, correct me if I'm wrong, but your clientele is primarily women of mm-hmm. color, right? Mm-hmm. Right. And so potentially they've not had someone who has the cultural competence or context that they're working with, that they are existing in.
Yeah, I would say sometimes. Sometimes they have, sometimes mm-hmm. they haven't. You know, I don't really know what I feel like. There is a part of me that knows that therapy works when you find a therapist who connects with you, right? Like if I am going and I'm seeking a therapist, it has to be someone who I have to be able to listen to what they're saying. I have to be willing to be honest, because I've also known folks to get really reflective and say, you know what, to be honest, I never told my other therapist this, so they wouldn't have even had the information to connect these dots, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's mm-hmm. also a piece. And so that in a way is informative, because I think that we often, after an experience, say something was good or bad, but we rarely think about, did we show up fully in that experience and give the information that was needed? Because I can only work with someone so much as they share, right?
Yeah.
So if a person keeps a big piece of something a secret, we're working on this other thing without all the information. And I get it. People have various reasons for doing that. Most of us are, you know, immensely protective of ourselves. But I think that a part of it is a big goal of mine is, can I create enough safety in that therapeutic bond to where they feel they can share these things?
That reminds me of my mom recently has been saying that my dad is not a good patient. She's a nurse, mm-hmm. so she'll like go into some of his appointments with him and she'll just be like texting me like, he's not doing a good job of being a patient right now, of like making sure that they're talking about the thing they need to mm-hmm. talk about or giving the context that would help the practitioner do what needs to be done, basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what you just reminded me of. I think that's interesting what you've brought forward about clients needing that therapeutic bond, right? Needing to feel that safety and connection. Where are you getting that? Not necessarily a therapeutic bond, right? But in what spaces in your life do you feel that level of safety that you're trying to create for these folks?
That is a good question. I would say, I mean, honestly, the first thing that came to mind is nature. Mm-hmm. Just, it is a great source for me. I would also say, you know, having people in my life who I feel connected to, having places where I feel safe and calm. I know one of the questions that you had on the list was, you know, what's home for you or something like that? And it was so funny because my first thought was like, where I live. Like, and it hasn't ever mattered where I live, like how big, how small. I am someone who the environment of the space that I'm in plays such a huge role for me. and it just has to work. And so recently had a friend over and they were like, oh my gosh, this looks like you. And I'm like, that is the best thing to ever hear, because I like things to be clutter-free. Like and a part of this does, I think, tie into, again, back to the G Center, right? Having an environment that feels clear with someone with an open head and an open ajna is just so important, because it's like, it's already crowded in here. Externally needs to be clear. And so, you know, those spaces for me are connections. I also have a four line. So who are the people that I'm talking to, or the people that I'm engaging with, what places and spaces, just kind of like, I can feel it in my body. Like, I've even went to a hairstylist when I walked in, I just remember being like, I can relax in this space. And that's a bigger deal than I think I ever recognized before.
Yeah. A few things came through. The first one I want to mention is your beige and brown color scheme feels also related to that open G center, where I'm like, yeah, you want a neutral color that you can
razzle dazzle.
Yes. Do anything you want. Yeah. I just like, I noticed like back when you sent your, well, I was also looking at it recently, but anyways, looking at your website, that was one of the first things that came to mind, was like beige. Interesting. Mm-hmm. And I was like, it's probably an open G.
Yeah.
So shout out to me.
Mm-hmm. Shout out to you.
The second thing is that environment piece is so crucial. I feel that very strongly as well, despite my profile, which I don't think would really matter anyways. But I feel very strongly that where I am in a physical sense, as well as in the like emotional sense, which would be like the people I'm around, really impacts where my brain goes in a given situation, in conflict, when I'm scared. Like, I've noticed this very clearly, that whoever I'm spending the most time with, or whatever the room looks and feels like vibrationally, is going to shift that like first thought that comes out of my mind when I experience contrast in any way.
That's interesting.
Yeah. This leads me to neurodiversity and, well, kind of, and human design, but I'm not sure if the question is fully formed in that direction. So speaking just with neurodiversity, and especially as Black women and women of color that you primarily work with, I'm really interested in the ways that you've seen in your profession, I guess, this expansion, this new levels of accessibility around neurodiversity has been impacting the people that you work with.
I would say awareness of it and the different ways in which it shows up. I would say that hopefully this will make sense. There are certain words and phrases that cue me to things, right? And I'm going to give a few examples.
Thank you.
So one, if somebody says, I didn't know where to start, right? Sat down to work on this and I just couldn't figure out where to start, what to do first. Normally is like, there's something more there around their executive functioning, how they're perceiving things. Are they neurodivergent? What's another one? Not knowing where to start. Emails, pretty much any conversation about emails is a cue. Other cues, not specifically around neurodivergence, but this is more like defined ajna, open ajna type things.
Yeah.
I don't understand why. And the frequency with which a person says that.
Yeah.
There's also a certain facial expression.
Oh, interesting.
That lets me know that a person has a defined ajna. I know I've never said this to anyone before, because I'm like, I don't think people would get this. And then I'm also like, I don't know that they need to get it, because I know that it's accurate and it has so far not been wrong. A lot of filling in the blanks and a lot of assessment of other people's behavior. And I know we all do this, but it's a, why would they do this if, right?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
And that is almost always 100% there's a defined ajna there. Definition, very, very clear when someone is single versus a split. Definition based on things that they say or how they talk about things. And so you know, I know I expanded, but I just feel like these things to me have just become so clear where I am then, whether I've seen a person's chart or not, able to use human design without saying it's human design to help someone understand why something was a challenge or why something seemed very black or white or why it feels better for that person to call somebody in the midst of something.
Yeah, I've said this before, but human design is most useful in my eyes when we use it as a permission slip for a thing that already is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. Something that's already true for you.
Yes.
And now you just get to have that little external, quote unquote, external validation that you're looking for to be how you already are.
Yeah. And I think it's a tool for self-compassion for ourselves and then especially for others. Mm-hmm. Because as someone with a single definition who can tell you information quickly, Gemini sun, Gemini rising.
Yeah.
So many people have told me I was impatient. And I literally was just thinking about this the other day. And I was like, I spent so much of my life waiting for other people to catch up.
Ooh.
And I know that sounds harsh.
I feel it.
However, it is very true. Like in elementary school, I know I'm older than you, but those worksheets, I would be done so fast. Now I'm sitting here waiting for half the room to catch up. I went to take the GRE. I was done. One was like, are you going for a bathroom break? I was like, no, I'm finished. She's like, it's only been 45 minutes. Ma'am, take this test. I'm done. I don't need to sit here for 3 days.
Right.
I am like literally not going to run out of time on a timed exam. Mm-hmm. But because I move quick, I spend so much time waiting. My biggest struggle in like school, college, grad school was people asking a million questions. And I am just sitting here like, what's unclear?
They're fine.
Go to office hours. Mm-hmm. Why do I need to sit here because you still don't? And it's not even like a rude thing, but when I think about how much of my life I've truly spent waiting, I understand why I feel impatient. Mm-hmm. And so now it's like I can do things to mitigate it, but I understand why and I can have more compassion for myself because I do actually spend a lot of time waiting for people to get to the point.
Yeah.
It's like I was there 3 minutes ago. We're still sitting here.
Oh my. Yes. Hard relate on this one. I'm going to take all the time on the test. More often than not, I'm going to take all the time on the test. However, I will see a social situation play out years in advance. Mm-hmm. Like I have said things previously that are so obvious and I have received vitriol because someone was like, where is this coming from? Like, what are you talking about? Whatever.
Yeah.
And then 2, 3, 7 years later, someone's texting me being like, oh, by the way, the thing you said was going to happen happened. And it's like, oh, mm-hmm. That's nice.
Yeah. Right. Funny that, huh?
Interesting. Interesting. Are you going to give me back the 7 years of my life where you were mad at me or no?
Exactly. Yes.
That is so fascinating. Sometimes I forget that there are, of course, other people who experience this thing.
Which is where I think the compassion comes from, right?
Yeah.
Because before I would sit in class. I remember I have a friend, we're still cool, but like I was like, don't ask another question. Like we were in class and I was like, do not, like under the table, we're killed. I'm like, stop. Mm-hmm. Stop. Like what? It's literally 1 + 1. Where is the question coming from? And I think that now I understand that there are different processing speeds, right?
Yeah.
Some people are very much external processors. I'm not. And that's why it does not make sense to me that it even feels good for you to sit here and ask these questions. And it also makes sense to me why some people just need more time. And so I think that the compassion is both internal and for others.
Yeah, absolutely. I also wanted to quickly speak on, you mentioned like you can utilize human design without telling people mm-hmm. that's necessarily where it's coming from. And I have also really appreciated that aspect of human design as well, right? Because sometimes yeah. I'll do speeches or speaking engagements and I'm incorporating things that come from a place of spirituality. Mm-hmm. Either via human design or via some other thing. However, I know that the computer engineers at Microsoft do not want to hear me talk about an open Ajna.
Yes.
You know, mm-hmm. they don't want to hear mm-hmm. about the chakra system.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I've been thinking a lot about accessibility recently. And sometimes for people, what makes a thing accessible is removing the quote unquote spirituality or the woo aspect of it.
Yes.
And then they can receive mm-hmm. it. And I find that to mm-hmm. be very interesting if this impacts you at all as like a free spirit to not necessarily obscure, but to like omit sometimes the origin of a thing or the context that you're using to help someone else get the context.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say it really would depend on the situation.
Yeah.
I think the more that I have incorporated it and the more that I'm aware of the cues to me as to like what we're actually dealing with, the more I feel less of a need to like show that, oh, this comes from this place.
Right.
Right. And so I think that sometimes I just talk to people about, you know, linear thinking, right? I may talk to a person about how does it feel when you try to sit with this by yourself versus how does it feel if you sit with this in like conversation with another person or in the same space as another person. And I think those are things that people can relate to. Mm-hmm. And I also feel like human design in many ways is a tool for self-awareness and a tool for understanding like how we navigate the world. And it works mm-hmm. so far. I mean, knock on wood, it's worked so far. But I do think that it can be helpful to some people to know where this information is coming from, because they may be able to do their own research, make their own assessment and understanding. And I also realize that it's not necessarily needed to still get the message across.
Definitely. Awesome. Good cow. Now it's time for the seedling round, where short questions lead to tasty answers.
Okay.
So why do you hate the original Star Trek?
This caught me off guard. And then like your absolute disgust. It's just like coming through. I do not know. It just has not resonated with me in the same way that like Picard has.
Yeah, that's okay. To be honest, this is a Picard household. So that was acting.
That's hilarious.
Okay. What is your favorite aspect of your chart as of today? And what is the aspect that you need to grow into the most?
My favorite aspect, I think, is the ability to generate ideas so freely. Oh, hold on. Is that it? Because the other day I was like, I need to stop having ideas.
Relatable.
It can be overwhelming. You know what I would say? Think it's gate 5. Please, yeah. I hope I have it right. The gate of patterns.
Yeah.
That. Because I can pick up on patterns. And that has helped me to help others in so many ways.
Do you have that 515 channel?
I have like one channel. Oh, I'm out here on like a hope and a prayer. I don't have a lot in my chart. It's
just a little string.
Just a string.
Okay. And then what is the area of your chart that requires like the most growth? And I'm trying not to say that this is your least favorite, you know, I'm being diplomatic.
I know,
but
I know. You know, honestly, I don't have one answer. It's between the root and the ego. I would say the like ego center is more challenging. It has become more of that as I've entered entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
With pricing and value and being able to see the value in things that are from me. It's very easy for me to see other people. But then when it's for me, I'm just like, I don't know what to do with that. Yeah. And so I think that is a really hard one.
Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
And why is your lens a satisfying way to be?
Because it's filled with possibilities. It does not feel restrictive and it does not feel fake. It just feels like there are just options and I can see almost all of them.
Yeah. Beautiful. Good cow. That ends the seedling round. So I like to end with the question of the week.
Okay.
What is your question of the week?
My question of the week is, why do parents put gift bows on household appliances in houses and say that that's their kids' Christmas gift when the kids did not ask to be here?
This is so funny.
I know it's a very specific question. I've really been thinking about it.
Yeah. That's hilarious. Wow. Well, write in, parents. Why are you doing that? Okay, Siobhan, where can people connect with you and support your work?
The best way would be, so I do have two websites. I don't know. I think you saw the one. Did you see both or one?
I think I only saw one.
Okay. So the best and most updated would be my website. That is thehealinglouncellc.com. That is where the most updated information will be, where you can reach out to me via the contact form, also Instagram at Sincerely Siobhan.
Love it. And I'm going to go ahead and ask, because I thought you'd bring it up. When are those journaling cards coming out?
You know what? I actually have a date.
Yes.
They will be up and on the website. I'm scheduled to have a company work on it, because let me tell you, I'm a boomer when it comes to technology at this point. So I just had to like hire someone to get it done. So by December 6th, they should be available. So less than a week.
Oh my God.
I have them in stock. I actually have some here. Did I show you these? Did I post these?
No, not yet.
So I have them here. Wow. I have the photography done. I have the description done. And I have a team who will work on it December 5th with the goal that it will be up and live December 6th.
Siobhan, I am livid that it's a week away and you didn't mention it not one time.
I know.
Are you joking?
I just told you. I said I'm literally out here on a hope and a prayer. I actually meant that.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm very glad that I asked.
So am I.
These journaling cards are out now by the time this podcast is edited. And they're awesome. Can you tell us, just give, like, you know, the spiel, if you don't mind?
Yeah. So these cards really tie into a question you were asking me earlier about when did I know that I was good at asking questions once I started to document the questions. It was one of those like, oh, this is really good. Like, oh, okay. And I continued to use them. I have practiced them with friends, gotten great feedback, but these are really about self-exploration. So it is a way that I feel people can do and ask themselves some questions that they may not have asked. I also feel like when people avoid asking themselves certain things, there's information there. Right. So going through these questions, see how you feel, which ones feel easy for you, which ones are like you don't really want to go there. You really don't want to answer that question, but they could absolutely be used by individuals. I also feel like therapists can use them, i.e. I use them quite often. And I think coaches can use them when you have someone who doesn't know what they want to talk about, what they want to say, being able to have something external guide the discussion can be super helpful.
Yeah. Amazing. Take my word for it. These are going to be good. They're going to rock your socks off. Okay. Thank you so much, Siobhan, for sharing this little slice of internet with us.
Thank you. This was fun.
Oh, good. All right. As always, listener, I appreciate your ears and I'll see you in the next one.